If you will remember, last week, chapter 10 began a new section of the book of Proverbs. And you will notice that actually there is a difference in the Proverbs as we have been looking at it. The first chapter dealt with introduction and some more of a long range view of things, and now in this particular section it takes on a shorter or briefer connotation. The statements that are made are concise, to the point, and yet they have a great depth about them. And so we will be studying the Proverbs, and again, the outline is a tool to be used. It's not something that is dogmatic. If you can come up with a better outline, you let us have it. We'd be glad to use it. Doug's doing the best he can with the outlines. I explained to him when he started the Proverbs that he'd find difficulty in outlining it. Because sometimes it will seem that the writer has a thought, he'll make a statement and go past it, and then come back to it again. But yet it is concise and it is consistent, and there's a great deal of truth that is involved in the Proverbs. So I encourage you to study each week and look into the chapter, and if questions do arise about a particular statement that is made, we shall endeavor to find an answer for you. Let's read the 11th chapter. There's 31 verses in it. Let's read it when we'll come back and take a look into the contents. And a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. The righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, but transgressors shall be taken in their own naughtiness. When a wicked man dieth, his expectation shall perish, and the hope of unjust men perisheth. Good morning, Bonnie. We're studying chapter 11 this morning. The righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. An hypocrite with his mouth destroyeth his neighbor, but through knowledge shall the just be delivered. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoiceth, and when the wicked perish, they are shouting. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. He that is void of wisdom despiseth his neighbor, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. As righteousness tendeth to life, so he that pursueth evil pursueth it to his own death. They that are of a forward heart are abomination to the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. As a jewel of gold and a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. Now, you talk about a proverb. That's a real proverb, isn't it? We didn't tell the whole lot now. We don't take offense, ladies. We'll explain that when we get to it. Maybe. the desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. He that diligently seeketh good procureth favor, but he that seeketh mischief, it shall come unto him. He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Behold, the righteous shall be recompensed in the earth, much more the wicked and the sinner. You notice this, again, is a chapter that is filled with a lot of truth and a lot of things that are said here that are applicable to us. We'll follow the outline as best we can this morning. In the first nine verses, we will just simply deal with it as the statement introduces it. A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. Now, I think that this applies in many areas of life, but let's look at it first of all with in business fairness, just dealing on an honest basis. A false balance. Now, God had said to Israel of old that they were to have a just weight and just measurements. Let me maybe give you some thoughts that will help you to appreciate what is being said here. Now, everything today is computerized. You can throw a lemon or a banana on the scales and punch in a certain code, and it weighs it and prices it and all of this. But it was not always like this. And there was a time, some of you that are younger won't remember this, and God help you for having missed some of the great days of earth. But some of you don't know what a cotton scale is. But a cotton scale basically is it was a system of balance. It was a bar so long, it had a hook out here on this end, but actually it's offset on this bar so that it hung by one swivel, and the other swivel you'd always hang whatever you intended to weigh on it. And there was what you called we called it a P. I suppose it would various names given to it. But you just moved it out on the bar until you found a place that scale would balance. And when you had it balanced, then it'd give you the weight. And anybody that ever picked cotton, and God help them, especially their back. I'm like the guy in the song, I never did pick cotton. My mama did and my papa did, but I never did pick cotton. I've chopped cotton, but I thank the Lord I was always away from it, time it got ready to pick. Done a lot of things that were just as bad as pick cotton. As far as I'm concerned, gathering corn is just as bad as picking cotton. Especially if you're short or you know the least one in the family and got the down row. That was the one the wagon ran over. Two men stood on each side and gathered two or three rows, and then you'd run over two rows. And if you were the least in the family or youngest in the family, you'd got the down row, which meant you had to pick the corn up off the ground. That's where your stalks were. Well, I got the down row a lot of times, so I never did think much of gathering corn. I wouldn't think much of picking cotton. But that's beside the point. I want to come back to the scale. Now, you take that scale, and that P was the determining factor. It had to be balanced. It had to have exact weight itself. And in the end, or the bottom of that P, it would be drilled out and so that it would be the exact weight to give you the proper balance so that it would weigh it. Now, it would weigh exact if everything was in kilter. But if you took just a little bit of lead and put in the bottom of that P, then it would give you an unjust balance. And it would weigh wrong, and it would weigh in favor of the person who was owning the scales. In other words, you might be picking 100 pounds of cotton and get paid for 90. And that gives you the idea here. You ladies could appreciate it from this vantage point. The bathroom scales. If you adjust them where they were in about 5 to 10 pounds light, the Lord said that's abomination. So you better quit it. You get the idea. This is the balance. In every area of life, there's always a measurement. Since we're talking about farming, yes, some of you never get to work at a thrasher. You came in the day of the combine and you missed a lot. But up on the top of the thrasher, there was actually it was a chain-driven cups really that picked up the grain from the cylinder in the bottom of the thrasher. And it would dump it into this tray on top, and depending on how you set the balance, it would reach a certain point, and when it reached a certain weight, it would dump it, and that would give you a bushel of grain or a half bushel, ever how you needed to measure it or wanted to measure it. Oats would, you'd set it at a certain balance. Wheat, you'd set it at another balance. Barley, you'd set it at another, because each one of those bushels will weigh differently. I don't even remember now the weights. A bushel of oats will weigh differently than a bushel of wheat, and a bushel of barley will weigh differently. But you measured each one. It was by weight that you measured it. Now, sometimes there are certain things that you measure just in volume. And you have the same situation. The Lord wants an honest volume. If you're measuring in gallons, He wants an honest gallon. And if it's to be a quart, then it ought to be a quart. God expects the dealing to be right. The whole thing comes to this, that a false balance is abomination to the Lord. If a man will use a false scale, then that means he'll be dishonest in all of the business, and that's abomination to the Lord. So in a business matter, God expects and wants folks to deal in an honest fashion. And certainly that ought to be true in every aspect of life. You see the situation. If you're measuring something in dollars, it ought to be an honest measurement. If you're measuring it in whatever measurement, God expects honesty in business. He wants that to stand out. And so this is certainly here. He said a just weight is His delight. In other words, this is what pleases God. God is not pleased with dishonesty. He wants honest business dealings in the business world, and especially from His children. And we live in a world that is prone to dishonesty. I don't want to disillusion you, but that's the truth. It seems as though that men are bent on dishonesty. It's not anything really new. It was that way in the days of Noah. It was in that way in the days of Lot. We've seen it from generation to generation. There are various times that folks are redeemed through the blood of Christ, and whenever they prevail in a society, then you find by and large a more honest society than you do whenever the worldly, the unbelievers, are in control. But certainly God expects business fairness. And then He talks about pride. When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. Arrogance. God does not accept arrogance. He's not pleased with arrogance. And certainly we need to be very careful in this area of life that we don't come to shame whenever pride takes over and we begin to measure ourselves among ourselves. And the New Testament writer said we're not wise. But pride is a destructive factor. This is other things are, and certainly when pride cometh, then cometh shame. Sometimes men, especially that work in the political arena, get to a place that through pride they feel like they themselves are exalted above the law. We saw a president who had to resign in disgrace some years ago. And basically it was a matter of pride. Somehow or another he certainly was deceived in his own thinking, but he had gotten to the place that he felt like he was above the law. And let me say this in defense of Richard Nixon, that who we're talking about. I think probably history will give him a fair rendering, and we'll speak of him by and large as a relatively successful president. But he had a blight in his life. Pride came, and honestly, he could not feel that he should be subjected to the law of the average man. That was, if you study his life in the last days in office, last months in office, he seemed to indicate that. That's very tragic, and it brings shame. But you can see it applicable in every aspect of life. When pride cometh, we begin to think of ourselves more than what we really are. Then it always brings shame. But he said, but with the lowly is wisdom. And certainly we need to understand our frame and our nature and our bent, and to look at ourselves in the right light. And you notice then in verse 3, he talks about the integrity of the upright. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perversion of transgressors shall destroy them. Certainly, we ought to be guided by integrity. If we have convictions that have been formed from a knowledge of the Word of God, it will guide every area of our life. Again, if we look at it in a business perspective, the integrity of a man, is his word worth anything? If he tells you something, can you believe what he says? If a man tells you that he'll give you X number of dollars for a certain amount of work, can you be dependent on that? And if not, why? Then they are not guided by real convictions. I remember whenever I was just a kid, there was a neighbor asked me to take care of their animals while they were gone. And whenever they got back, she gave me exactly half of what she said she'd give me. And you talk about being very disappointed. That's a small example of what he's saying here, but that's the whole thing. If it involved millions of dollars, the same integrity ought to guide the upright. It makes no difference. This proverb that we're studying from will tell us that there is a man who will swear to his own hurt and yet perform the doing of it. In other words, integrity will guide that man in life, but perversion of transgressors shall destroy them. Ultimately, it brings a reproach on them, and it'll get to be a situation, again, as we think about the business world, where you know that you're not going to trust them. There's some people that I just about soon not work for, because you know that they're going to try to hook you some way or another. Again, I can only speak from experience, but I'd agreed with a man to haul hay for him years and years ago. We'd agreed on a set price per bale. And whenever we'd gotten through, he sidled up to me and said, well, now so-and-so is going to haul this hay for this amount of money, and you're charging me more. And I'd been wise enough to get with the other hauler before I dealt with the guy, because I knew him. And I said, well, that's strange. I said, he told me he's going to charge the same amount I am. And he went ahead and paid me, but the man was trying to steal from me. And it brings that kind of a testimony in life. I knew the man prior, ahead of time. And so the transgressors, the perversion of transgressors, shall destroy them. It kills their reputation. Again, as we think about the business world. Now, in verse 4, there's the putting things in a right perspective. And probably we need a right perspective in life, because we, again, live in a materialistic society that says if a man amasses wealth, he's successful. Now, some of the most successful people in life are probably the poorest. And I don't say that just because of a poor upbringing, but a man is not successful just because he amasses wealth. Because wealth has a limit, and it cannot go through the judgment with you. Look at verse 4. Riches profit not in the day of wrath. And there is a day of wrath to come. Now, there may be a day of wrath in as far as the business world is concerned, but certainly there is a day of wrath when we face God. And God is certainly disproving of dishonest dealings, and riches do not profit in the day of wrath. In other words, God's not going to measure in that day about what a man holds in his hand. Jesus said this in the New Testament: a man's life does not consist of the abundance of the things that he possesses. We need to understand that life is more than just material and dollars and cents. We need to get a real grip on life, and the writer here intends that we do that. See, these are proverbs for life and life application. He said, the righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, but transgressors shall be taken in their own naughtiness. Each one of these proverbs points out that there is value in doing that which is right, and there's always a judgment for those that do wrong. Now, the Bible speaks of the wheels of the God guiding, they grind exceedingly slow, but they also grind exceedingly fine. There is a judgment that awaits men. It may seem that for years a man gets away with that which is dishonest, and he may go all the way through life down to the grave, but when he faces God, his riches will not profit, and all that wickedness will catch up with him, because at the great white throne we find that the books are open, and God has a very exacting record of all of the lives of every man, woman, boy, and girl that's ever been born on this earth, and there's not anything hidden from the eyes of him with whom we have to do. The Bible said the eyes of the Lord really go to and fro on the earth, beholding the good and the evil. There's not anything that's hidden from the eyes of God. So, again, we're called back to this area of life, and our goals ought to be right. Our purposes of life ought to be right. The righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. A hypocrite with his mouth destroyeth his neighbor, but through knowledge shall the just be delivered. You find that the unjust or false balances are an abomination to the Lord. God expects us to do right. And then in verses 10 through 14, let's look at the effect of the righteous within the community. What does it mean? And I think we can appreciate what's said here. A man does leave his mark in a sense on this world. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoiceth. And when the wicked perisheth, they're shouting. You know, to give you an enlarged example of this, there were not very many people that mourned over the death of Adolf Hitler. I mean, there was a lot of people rejoiced. They shouted whenever that regime fell and that country was finally stopped with all of its tragedy, the travesty that went with it. But even in a lesser sense, every one of us were affecting life. I would trust that we would like to stand on the righteous side, that we might influence society for good. When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. Yet on the other hand, when the wicked perish, there is shouting or there's rejoicing that wickedness is removed from society, and certainly we've seen that on various occasions. I don't think there'll be very many mourners that would mourn if Saddam Hussein were to pass off of the scene today, because he's a wicked man and has been very cruel and even destructive of his own nation and own people. On the other hand, it's always a blessed thing whenever righteousness prevails in a society. And anyway, we influence our society that is around us as we go through this life. In the outline, let me read it. A man leaves an impact as he travels through life. It's on his family, his home and community, and his friends. And certainly we understand what the Proverbs meant, that steel sharpeneth steel, and so a man does sharpen the countenance of his friend. You and I are to be instruments in this life to influence and affect those that we come in contact with for the good and not for the evil. And the verse 11, by the blessing of the upright the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. He that is void of wisdom despiseth his neighbor, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. You know, there are some things that ought not be told, even if they're true. Somehow or another, we have an idea that if it's true, we're at liberty to tell it. There are some things that ought to be hidden, and a wise person and a faithful person will sometimes just leave a matter alone. I think there are areas of life and experiences of life that are best left untold, even if they be true. And so we do affect our life, and I trust we are of a faithful spirit, that we don't want to despise the neighbor. We don't want to destroy the neighbor or reveal the secrets, but just simply leave some things alone and leave it in the hands of God. Where no counsel is, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. And certainly that is true. And that's right counsel. That's not wrong counsel. I think there's some wrong counsel that goes on every day in our nation, and we'll not get into politics except to say that we believe that there is misrepresentation today a lot of times about certain contracts that are made. I think that we're seeing, very honestly, an effort to prop up some promises that were made about a great wealth that was going to come out of Mexico to the benefit of the United States. And here it is. We are guaranteeing loans as taxpayers of the United States of America. We're guaranteeing loans to try to prop up a failing economy in a country that was supposed to be an open market and a benefit to us. I'm persuaded that sometimes counseling wrong, but if you're good counselors, and the more counselors you have that are wise counselors, good counselors, I think that there'd be, if they'd accept the counsel, and I'm for a balanced budget amendment, I think that everybody ought to have to live within their means, whether it be a city government, county government, state government, or a federal government. It ought to have to live within its means. And that'd be wise counsel. Nobody's ever prospered that borrowed and borrowed and borrowed and ultimately owed more interest than they could ever pay. I mean, it's just unfeasible. And so I think we've got some counsel today that is wrong, but if there's a falling whenever that occurs. But anyway, we affect our society. And we affect society by the counsel we give, whether it be in life or by word. And therefore, we ought to give right counsel. Now let's look on in verses 15 through 23. The escape of anxieties if we avoid visits dealing with those that seek success simply by financial gain. Let's look at these verses. We're going to have to hurry because we're just going to run out of time here in a moment. There's a latter portion of this that we want to deal with. And let's just briefly look at it. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it. Now that has been mentioned before. That means that if you go on the note of somebody that's a stranger, and that's a guarantee or signature, which means if you or the borrower, and you get somebody else to sign for it, most of the time the one that is the lender will go to the surety rather than to the one that has applied for the debt or the loan. And that suretyship, that's what he's talking about. And I like the way he says it. I think he he that hateth suretyship is sure, but it'll keep you out of trouble. Yeah, that's one of the Proverbs, but a whole lot is said here. You won't dissolve friendships. You won't wind up in financial difficulties yourself because of somebody else's failing. If you hate suretyship, you're sure. In other words, you don't have to worry about whether the bank will be knocking on your door for a debt that you cannot pay when somebody else has not paid it. And so there's some extremely wise counsel. And then he talks about the gracious woman retaining honor and strong men retain riches. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. I think you see that proverb, but I'm persuaded it is well for a person. If he's merciful, he does well to his own soul or does good, which means that he's not eaten up with hatred and bitterness. And on the other hand, the man that is cruel, he troubles his own flesh. Usually there's such bitterness in his life. And I think that, honestly, the mind does have an effect upon the body as to the enzymes it produces and so forth. And I would not be surprised to find some correlation between cancer and bitterness or various other diseases. I'm persuaded that it certainly brings on a lot of times failure of the heart. In the last days, the Lord said men's hearts would fail them for fear. A lot of things affect us in life. And so we see then here just some basic things that we need to see. The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteous shall be a sure reward. Just pays to do right. As righteousness attendeth life, so he that pursueth evil pursueth it to his own death. These proverbs are contrasts we see self-evident. They that are of a forward heart are abominations of the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight. And he said, though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished. In the Psalms, the wicked are saying, we will break his bands asunder. God said, why do the people rage and the heathen imagine a vain thing? And what they're wanting to do is break the rule of God from their lives. And here the proverb tell us, the writer is saying the same thing. No hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished. It makes no difference how great the crowd that stands against God becomes. I don't care how large the atheistic society grows. They join hand in hand, but it does not change things. They're not going to be able to stand against God, and they will not go unpunished. There's just no such thing as opposing God. God's strength is evident and sure, and he will bring to judgment. But he said, the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. And then in verse 22, we told you to deal with this. As a jewel of gold and a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. Now, beauty is a deceptive thing. And I'm not disregarding beauty and not recommending that a woman look the best she can. But the jewel of gold is simply a gold ring. It's a nose ring. And if you've ever been around hogs and ever raised hogs, you ought to be able to appreciate this. An old hog, if you don't want them to root, you'd use a snap a steel ring through their nose. It makes their nose snore when they try to root under the fence. That's the whole purpose of it, keep them from rooting out and getting away. But it's a jewel of gold. I mean, you don't put a gold ring in a hog's nose. I mean, that's never, it's unheard of. And that's the picture that he wants you to get. You snap a steel ring in there for a purpose, but you don't put a gold ring in a swine snout. And I don't intend to put a gold ring in my nose or in my ear either, but you can wear them if you want to. I don't intend to wear diamond studs in my nose or my ears either. I have some difficulty with that anyway, but that's another story. That's got nothing to do with this. And he says, so is a fair woman, which is without discretion. Sometimes when you see a beautiful woman, you think, my, there's somebody that is certainly has a real handle on life, and yet when you find out how they are, they have nothing but the beauty. Their character is totally destructive and devastating to them, and especially among the Hollywood crowd. Sometimes we get the idea that people are like the characters that they play. For example, if you, and I don't watch it a lot, but the woman who plays the doctor in the West, what's her name? Dr. Quinn, medicine woman, and that she's always plays a real wholesome character. But I heard her interviewed one time, and the guy asked her, said, how many times have you been married? Once? And she said, no, this is the fourth time. The character sometimes displays a different image than what they really are. And just to look at a woman, and she happens to be a beautiful woman, they think, my, I really want to get acquainted with her. She must be a wholesome person. And then we find out that she's without discretion, does not have the values of life or anything. And that's that proverb. I told you I'd deal with it when we got through it. If you had any questions about it later, we'll do it. But I want to deal with this matter of dispersing abroad that closes this chapter. And I think it's important. See, he said, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth. Scatters and yet increases. And there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. There's always the question in mind, how should I give? How much should I give? Well, the writer of Proverbs said, there is that scatters abroad, and yet it brings increase. Now, in the New Testament, we are told that God loves a cheerful giver. In 1 Corinthians, chapters 8 and 9, there is this matter of giving that is dealt with in the closing verse of chapter 9 of 2 Corinthians. We're told, thanks be unto God for His unspeakable gift. That's the summation of giving. But there are those who are generous, and it seems as though they're throwing things away. But really they're not. There comes a time that it will return. I could speak of a personal example. I won't, except to say that there was an experience in my life where I assisted someone, and I was told by another, I said, that's a lot of money to give to a person. And I said, that's true, but if my son were in the same circumstances, I'd hope somebody would help him. And I've seen that return to me more than what I gave. So you can scatter abroad, and yet it does increase. On the other hand, if we're a skin plant, and we had a saying where I grew up, when we talked about somebody's type, we'd say they'd skin a flea for the tallow. That's tight. To skin a flea for the tallow. Now, hogs weren't rendering out, but a flea doesn't produce much fat. But if we withhold more than is meat, and this is an area, let me say this, as far as giving is concerned, and especially in relation to the church, it's a grace you have to grow into. Giving does not come easy to me. It's something I have to grow in. Just by nature of my raising, I am prone sometimes to withhold more than me. But I have to struggle with that, and I try to struggle with that and be honest with God, because it is an area of life that's important. He said, the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. God promises a return. And he that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but the blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. And you can look at the matter of Joseph as he was put in charge of the storehouses of Egypt. And they opened those storehouses to the nations around them. They opened it to their own nation, and they opened it to the nations around them. And all the nations came into Egypt and bought corn. But had Joseph closed those storehouses and said to those people, you cannot have it, they'd have cursed him. But Joseph stands out as one of the great characters, not only of biblical history, but of world history, because of what he did in regard to that time in Egypt and the great famine. And so this matter of giving, it's important. He that diligently seeketh good procureth favor, but he that seeketh mischief, it shall come unto him. You'll find it if you're looking for it. He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. The fool shall be servant to the wise of heart. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that wins souls is wise. And we understand that, I think, pretty well. Behold, the righteous shall be recompensed in the earth, much more the wicked and the sinner. There is a scattering abroad that leads to increase. There's a withholding that does bring poverty. I think God wants us to be discerning in our matter of giving and distributing abroad.